Well, good evening and welcome to the Kirchville family reunion, which apparently is complete with Terry the Clown. We're glad that you could be here and celebrate with us. What a wonderful day it's been to be with God's people. I thought about how proud Barry must be, my fellow laborer, to have not only four sons who are trying to serve God, but to be able to hear two of them preach the gospel. And you're fortunate to have them in your midst here. And I thank you for letting me come and be a part. It was during the days of captivity, perhaps the darkest days of Israel's history, when God was so displeased with them that He allowed their enemy, the nation of Babylon, to come, destroy the city and the temple, and carry them away to serve a foreign king in Babylon. And when we get to Daniel chapter 3, we have already been introduced to four young men who were outstanding among the sons of Israel: Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. I want us to focus our attention on those last three, and more in particular, the names that were assigned to them that we are more familiar with: Shadrach, Meshach, and as one little girl said in Bible class, the billy goat. So I want to encourage you to turn to Daniel chapter 3 as we seek to profit from the Old Testament, to read these stories of old and remember that they were written for our learning, that we through perseverance and encouragement of the Scriptures might have hope. Daniel, the seer, had already interpreted the dream of King Nebuchadnezzar, who, as you recall, saw the statue with the head of gold. And Daniel told him, "You, O king, are the head of gold, you and your kingdom." Well, Nebuchadnezzar was so impressed by that that he decided to build a statue of gold 90 feet tall. And not only that, after building the statue, he commanded the kingdom that whenever they heard the royal orchestra play, that they were to bow down and worship this image. When we get to Daniel chapter 3 at verse 8, the story reads, "For this reason, at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward and brought charges against the Jews. They responded and said to Nebuchadnezzar the king, 'O king, live forever. You yourself, O king, have made a decree that every man who hears the sound of the horn, flute, lyre, trigon, psaltery, and bagpipe, and all kinds of music, is to fall down and worship the golden image. But whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into the midst of a furnace of blazing fire. There are certain Jews whom you have appointed over the administration of the province of Babylon, namely Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have disregarded you. They do not serve your gods or worship the golden image which you have set up.' Then Nebuchadnezzar, in rage and anger, gave orders to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and these men were brought before the king. Nebuchadnezzar responded and said to them, 'Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the golden image that I have set up? Now, if you are ready, at the moment you hear the sound of the horn, flute, lyre, trigon, psaltery, and bagpipe, and all kinds of music, to fall down and worship the image that I have made, very well. But if you will not worship, you will immediately be cast into the midst of a furnace of blazing fire, and what God is there who can deliver you out of my hands?' Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, 'O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to give you an answer concerning this matter. If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the furnace of blazing fire, and He will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But even if he does not, let it be known to you, O king, that we are not going to serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up." We'll stop there for now. Isn't it unfortunate that so often this great account for us given in Daniel 3 is limited to children's Bible class? We have songs about this story and we have pictures about this story, and it's almost like it stays in the classroom. If it does come out into the assembly or the worship period, well, this is going to be a lesson for young people, because you see, these were Hebrew youths who did this. But I want you to see that this is a lesson that God had intended not just for young people, not just for men, women, whoever, but for all of His people. Why is that? Because we all face fiery trials. It was the Apostle Peter who said, "Beloved, do not be surprised when you encounter fiery trials as if something strange were happening to you." We're supposed to expect these things. We're supposed to plan and be prepared so that when these things do come, we will be able to pass through the fire. And I want you to see that the way we do that is not by fighting fire with fire. But what we're going to learn from Daniel 3 is that we fight fire with faith. Because the Hebrew writer tells us, "What more shall I say? Time will fail me if I tell of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, and the prophets," listen to it, "who by faith quenched the power of fire." Hebrews 11:34. By faith quenched the power of fire. We must fight fire with faith. And you're not going to believe this. I'm going to show you three ways in which we do that in this chapter. Three ways to fight fire with faith. Number one, you fight fire with faith, number one, by making it your own. You can't fight with someone else's faith. You have to make it your own. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego did not rest on the faith of their fathers. Oh, they came from a faithful family for sure. They were sons of Abraham. They were of God's chosen people. They were Israelites. And so much so that they had distinguished themselves, remember? Because like Daniel, they decided in their heart, "We're not going to defile ourselves with the king's delicacies and wine." And so they were faithful men. But they had made this faith their own. Look what they said in verse 17 when they were confronted with this decision. Either worship this golden image or die in a fiery furnace. They said in verse 17, "Our God, whom we serve." They didn't say the God that our parents served, or the God that our wives served, or the God that our friends served. This is the God that we serve. It was personal to them. Because if we are going to fight fire, we must fight it with a faith that is our own. They just came from a long line of men who in their own generation had stood up like Joshua and said, "Choose for yourselves whom you're going to serve. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." I want you to know that nobody else can make that decision for you. You have to make your faith your own. When I was growing up, it always was apparent to me when I was having trouble at school. It depended on which subject as to which parent I would go to for help. If it was something like English or language or writing, well, that's mom. But if it's math and science, go to dad. I can still see us sitting late at night at the kitchen room at the kitchen table, and I was not understanding algebra. And my dad was doing the problems for my homework, and he was having X, Y, and Z, and I didn't know what any of those stood for. And I was just copying. He would write it down, and so I would write that down. And finally, he saw what I was doing, and he just put the pencil down, and he said, "Bubba, I can't do it for you." Well, I want you to know that's how it is with your faith. Nobody can decide for you. If you're going to fight fire, it will be with a faith that is your own. How many of our young people have we lost because they've gone away from home and they've gone off to college somewhere, gone off to work somewhere, and when they left home, they left the Lord? Nobody's there to say, "It's Sunday, you need to get up and get ready for worship." Nobody's there to say, "You better have your Bible lesson done. You don't need to be around those people. You don't need to be drinking that." They never made their faith their own. We don't know how old Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were. As we said in chapter 1, they're called youths. And we don't know how much time had passed from chapter 1 to chapter 3. But I tell you what we do know, they didn't use their age as an excuse for why they weren't going to serve God. They could say, "Oh, we've got the rest of our lives. Let's just bow down this one time. We'll get out of trouble this time. And from this day forward, we won't ever do that again." I took my kids to Disney World the last time we were in Florida. And my son David, he got discouraged because we get up to ride something and say, "You must be this tall to ride this ride." He couldn't ride it, and I couldn't either because I wasn't that tall. Sometimes we think of Christianity as you must be this old before this is required of you. "Oh, just get it out of your system. Oh, they're just going through a phase. They'll grow out of it." Some never do. Why not? Because they don't make their faith their own. 2 Timothy chapter 2, 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 12. Listen how Paul made it individual. "For I know whom I have believed, and am persuaded that he is able to keep that which I have committed to him against that day." I know whom I have believed. Not mom and dad, not my friend, not the elders. I know whom I have believed. You want to fight the fiery trials? You fight them with faith. And you make your faith your own. We learned that from these Hebrew children. Number two, how do you fight fire with faith? You fight it, yes, by making it your own. Number two, you fight it by taking it with you wherever you go. You take your faith with you wherever you go. It doesn't stay behind. It's not bound by location. It's part of you. It's who you are. Remember, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were strangers in a foreign land. They weren't in Canaan. They weren't in the land promised to God's people. They were in captivity in Babylon. And who knows what has happened to their family at this point. Maybe their parents had been killed in the siege of Jerusalem. Maybe they've been separated and don't know where the rest of their family is. And neither did they use that as an excuse. "Well, God's deserted us. He's let this happen to us. So we're not going to serve Him anymore." They were not only in captivity, but they were in a place that had no respect for Jehovah. You remember in Daniel 1? When Nebuchadnezzar came and took Jerusalem, you remember it said he went into the temple and he got all the articles in the temple that the Israelites had used to worship Jehovah, and he brought them and put them in the temple of his gods, as if to say, "My God is stronger than your God. Your God is having to serve the gods of Babylon." How arrogant! But he didn't stop there. He took three boys, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Anytime you see a name in Scripture that ends in I-A-H, that's a form of Yahweh, Jehovah. Or ends in El, that's Elohim, a name of God. And so three boys who had God in their name, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, and he changed their names. And there is some speculation as to what their new names, their Chaldean names, meant. But here's some possibilities. Hananiah means God has favored me. But that was changed to Shadrach, which means command of Aku, one of the Babylonian gods. Mishael means who is what God is. But that became Meshach, who is what Aku is. Azariah means God has helped me. And he became Abednego, servant of Nebo, another Babylonian god. And I tell you what the king didn't realize is that he may have changed their names, but he didn't change who they were. He may have assigned them a new name, but it didn't change the faith that they had in God that would go with them wherever they went. Whether they were in Israel or Babylon, anywhere, they had a command. The first of the Ten Commandments from Sinai that said, "Thou shalt have no other gods before me." That wasn't bound by location. This law was not going to take precedent, or not going to bend to any law of man. It took precedence over every other. They took their faith with them. How are we going to fight the fiery trials of faith? We must take our faith with us wherever we go. Is it not so that one of the words the Scriptures use to describe us as God's people, words like pilgrim, stranger, exile, foreigner, sojourner, what those have in common is the concept that this is not our home. This is not our final resting place. We are just here for a short time. We're just passing through. But just because we're passing through does not mean we pass up opportunities to show our faith. Have you ever been somewhere where you felt, "I just don't belong here"? Earlier this year, I was asked to do one of my cousin's weddings, an Aggie wedding, a country wedding. I learned that all of the wedding party were going to be wearing boots. Now, folks, I know you think everybody from Texas is born wearing boots, but I didn't have a pair. And so I thought, I'm going to try to blend in with the rest of the wedding party. I'm going to go buy me a pair of boots. So I went down to Cavender's Boot City in Pasadena. And I walked in and I was immediately overwhelmed. I didn't know what I was doing. I kind of looked around for a little bit and I thought, well, those kind of look funny. I don't know if I could wear those. Mercifully, one of the workers came over and said, "Sir, are you buying for yourself?" And I thought, well, that's kind of a strange question. I said, "Yes, sir, I am." He said, "Well, let's get out of the ladies' section. The men's boots are over here." I didn't fit in there. We're not made to fit in here. We ought to be like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that others would see us not bowing down to the idols of materialism, not bowing down to the idols of pleasure, not bowing down to all the things of the world that try to distract us from our faith and take it from us, that we think we can just put that aside when we're not among God's people. When we go out into the world, We take the reputation of our family. When I introduce myself as Bubba Garner, I represent my father and my grandfather and all the Garners before me. When I say I'm from Texas, I represent my home state. But I want you to know, wherever you are and you say I'm a Christian, then you represent Jesus because you wear His name. And that's not something you just put on and take off just whenever it's convenient. If you're going to fight the fiery trials of faith, you must take it with you wherever you go. As one of my preaching brothers says, when you take Christ out of the Christian, the only thing you are left with is I-A-N, which stands for I Ain't Nothing. And that's exactly how that goes. If we're going to follow the example of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, we're going to have to say, I follow a command. It says, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And there is no law on this planet or any other that supersedes the law of God. His eyes, remember, are in every place, watching the good and the evil. Proverbs 15 and verse 3. Wherever you are, make sure people know that you're a Christian and you take your faith with you wherever you go. You do that, you'll fight fire with faith. Well, I want you to be impressed with a third thing about this battle in Daniel chapter 3. How are we going to fight fire with faith? Yes, we do so by making it our own. Number two, taking it with us wherever we go. But number three, if we're going to fight fire with faith, we do so by staking your claim at all costs. Staking your claim at all costs. Remember, there are only two options. Bow to the image or be cast into a furnace of fire. Safe to say, the stakes were high. Their lives were on the line. Not only that, everybody was doing it. If there was an argument that I used over and over to try to convince my mother when I was growing up why I should be able to go to some movie or go to some party, it always came down to everybody's going. We often use that as an exaggeration, but here, everybody was doing it. And they could have very easily used that as justification. But regardless of the consequences or whether or not anybody else was standing with them, look again what they said at verse 18. We are not going to serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. That left no room for misunderstanding. They were ready to stake their claim at all costs and say there is no room for negotiation. No matter what the consequence, no matter who else is with us, we are not going to worship the golden image that you have set up. Can I say to you that we all have difficult stands that we're going to have to make? Sometimes that may be even in our own family. Are you prepared to say that we shouldn't be watching this? We shouldn't be talking about them. That's gossip. You ready to do that? You may have to take a stand in your own church. This is not right. This isn't according to the Scriptures. We shouldn't be doing this. That's fighting fire with faith. Remember what Paul said in 2 Timothy chapter 4? Talking about his defense of the gospel, he said at first, no one supported me, verse 16, but all deserted me. May it not be counted against them. But look what he said at verse 17. But the Lord stood with me and strengthened me, so that through me the proclamation might be fully accomplished, that all the Gentiles might hear, and I was rescued out of the lion's mouth. He said at first, nobody supported me. For reasons of fear or whatever, they deserted me. They went to the other camp. But the Lord stood by me. That tells us that even when we think we're standing all alone, nobody else is standing with us, the Lord is with us. He is our helper. He will never desert us or forsake us. That's what gives us the strength and the courage to say, I am not going to bow down. I'm not going to serve Baal. I'm not going to do what everybody else is doing. Think about it. What if you had lived in the days of Noah? And you used everybody for the standard. Where would you have been when the rains came down and the floods came up? Would you have been in the safety and security of the ark? Or would you have been scratching and clawing on the outside trying to get in? That's what everyone else was doing. What would you have done on the porch of Pilate? When he asked, what shall I do with this one who is called Jesus? And they all shouted, crucify him! Crucify him! That's what everybody was doing. If we're going to fight the fiery trials of the evil one and pass them and come out the other side a solid gold, we must stake our faith, our claim at all costs, and trust in God to deliver us. We know, they said, that our God is the one who can deliver us out of your hand. But even if He does not, even if He exercises His every right to let us perish in the furnace of fire, we are not going to serve your image and bow down to the idol. Then, verse 19, Nebuchadnezzar was filled with wrath, and his facial expression was altered towards Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He answered by giving orders to heat the furnace seven times more than it was usually heated. And he commanded certain valiant warriors who were in his army to tie up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in order to cast them into the furnace of blazing fire. And these men were tied up in their trousers, their coats, their caps, and their other clothes, and were cast into the midst of the furnace of blazing fire. For this reason, because the king's command was urgent and the furnace had been made extremely hot, the flame of the fire slew those men who carried up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell into the midst of the furnace of blazing fire, still tied up. King Nebuchadnezzar, the king, was astounded, stood up in haste. He responded and said to his high officials, "Was it not three men we cast bound into the midst of the fire?" They answered and said to the king, "Certainly, O king." He answered and said, "Well, look, I see four men loosed and walking about in the midst of the fire without harm, and the appearance of the fourth is like a son of the gods." And Nebuchadnezzar came near to the door of the furnace of blazing fire and responded and said, "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, come out, you servants of the Most High God, and come here." Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out of the midst of the fire. And the satraps, the prefects, the governors, and the king's high officials gathered around and saw in regard to these men that the fire had no effect on the bodies of these men, nor was the hair of their heads singed, nor were the trousers damaged, and the smell of fire even come upon them. Nebuchadnezzar responded and said, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent His angel and delivered His servants who put their trust in Him, violating the king's command, and yielded up their bodies so as not to serve or worship any god except their own God. Therefore, I make a decree that any people, nation, or tongue that speaks anything offensive against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be torn limb from limb and their houses reduced to a rubbish heap, inasmuch as there is no other God who is able to deliver in this way." And the king caused Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to prosper in the province of Babylon. Sometimes we develop a defeatist attitude about our world. We wonder, is it even worth it to try to save people anymore? Nobody seems to care. Nobody listens. Everybody's just satisfied what they're doing. Why even bother inviting someone to come to the meeting this weekend? Just one person. What in the world could I do that would make a difference? Remember the question that the king asked before he threw them into the fire? What God is there who can deliver you out of my hands? When they were brought safely out of the fire, so much that they didn't even smell like smoke, not one hair was singed, the king made a complete turnaround and said, "What God is there who can deliver like the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego?" That's what your faith can do. When you choose to fight fire with faith, a faith that is your own, a faith that you take with you, a faith that is non-negotiable, all costs, when you do that, you have the power to turn someone's heart who is so hardened against Jehovah that here he recognized God's power over all other gods. If three Hebrew boys in the midst of a land that did not respect Jehovah could do that in just one fiery trial, doesn't that show us the power of our example when the fiery trials come upon us? Not to say, "Who am I? What can I do?" But to remember, I believe God, and He can do anything. Such causes us to remember. And we reflect on what was written for our learning, that we, through perseverance and encouragement of the Scriptures, might have hope. A hope that will cause us to be saved from the fiery furnace of hell and to reap joy everlasting in the land prepared for the faithful. Thank you for your kind attention. We'll stand at ease for about 10 minutes.